To quote the 2016 statewide town hall report on academic security and vitality for New Mexico, high unemployment, low job creation, high poverty, shrinking population, and poor education. These markers comprise what could be called the Forbidden Five for any state seeking to build a strong workforce. New Mexico is battling all of them. Tasked to overcome these barriers is Davin Lopez, President and CEO with the Mesilla Valley Economic Development Alliance, MEVIDA. Dr. Chris Erickson is Professor of Economics at New Mexico State University, and they are both here to discuss economic development in the Mesilla Valley. I'm Edmundo Resendez, your host on this special Voice of the Public, where we are taking your calls at 575-646-2212. Simon Thompson is standing by the social media desk to take your questions on Facebook and Twitter. Overcoming barriers to create a successful economic development program in our region. Today's topic on Voice of the Public, our guests, and your calls after the news.
Actually, we can take the calls in right now at 646-2212. Good afternoon. My name is Edmundo Resendez, your host for this very special Voice of the Public. My guest today is Davin Lopez, President and CEO with the Mesilla Valley Economic Development Alliance, or commonly known as MEVIDA, and Dr. Chris Erickson, Professor of Economics at New Mexico State University. Today, we are discussing economic development in southern New Mexico or throughout New Mexico. You know, it's open for discussion as to how we can succeed with economic development. And I'm just going to come out with this and confess something on why I want to do this show. It's kind of personal because as I have a 16-year-old daughter, and she's looking at colleges now, and I'm looking at financially how much that's going to cost. And one of the things she looked at is, and she brought up in conversation, was how can I make it in New Mexico? There are no jobs for people my age once you were to graduate in college in six years. What's my future in New Mexico? And there's a lot of discussion that goes on about brain drain. And I look at that, and I look at that with my own daughter. So my question today for you, Davin Lopez, and for you, Professor Erickson, is, how can we keep my daughter here in New Mexico so I don't have to spend a lot of money in out-of-state tuition? Because I think that, you know, looking at economic development, there's a lot of tough issues that need to be discussed. So why don't we start out the conversation with you, Davin, on where we are with economic development in southern New Mexico as we start to wrap up the first part of the year. Have there been any surprises and disappointments? And what are some economic priorities that MEVIDA has set forth?
Well, Edmundo, thank you for having me here today, and congratulations that your daughter is looking into colleges, because there's unfortunately there's a lot of young people today that aren't even looking at that route, and so anytime we can encourage that, I think helps economic development overall here in the state. So we go by fiscal year; we end June 30th, so we're almost towards the end of our fiscal year. And I'd like the public to know we really concentrate on what we call economic-based job creation. And a lot of that has to do with manufacturing. It has to do with service-based businesses that export their service outside the state of New Mexico. Thereby, the idea is to bring new dollars in. So we're very specific on what we do, what types of industries we try and go after. We're finishing our year, and we're finishing a pretty strong year. It's been steady against the last 5 years, which has really been, I think, part of the challenge, maintaining some type of consistency through what we've all had, a recession and economic hard times. So I'm happy with the results, but that does not to say that we have not had to change the way we do things. We've done things a lot differently today than what we were doing 5, 6, 7 years ago before the recession really started to impact New Mexico and Doña County. So we're happy to meet these numbers, but we've had to be very flexible with all the challenges that have come our way. We've had to adapt to how businesses need to adapt in order for them to try to grow here and really just to retain. And so part of this, I think, has taken MEVIDA in a different direction and reflection on what economic development should mean to the area.
In this type of situation, are you looking at being steady as success, that there was no decline in economic development for you?
I would say, look, people are going to look at the numbers differently, everything from unemployment rates. I would say we've had a steady consistency of economic-based job creation, which has helped. It has helped against some of the challenges of a reduction in government spending, which obviously affects us tremendously. And it also, more recently, I think, helps some of the impact that we're suffering from lack of gas and oil in the state, those types of revenues. So those there are some things that our efforts are not going to overcome. You know, really economic development is about an ecosystem of the of different parts of the economy being diversified and growing. We work in one area, and we work in one specific area because, quite frankly, we have a small budget and a small team to conduct these efforts.
Professor Erickson, you were in Santa Fe last week testifying before a committee on economic development. What testimony did you give? What questions were asked of you? And in your view, where are we in economic development in southern New Mexico?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. And I should mention your daughter, that while she may not be able to find a job in New Mexico when she graduates, although she might be able to, NMSU is an excellent university to go to, even if you're looking to go out of state, because we have we get people who come in here looking for our looking, if you want to use the term, poach our students to go out of state and work for them out of state all the time. The problem is not finding jobs for kids who have college educations, who've done a good job at education. The problem is getting those kids a good education to get them set up and ready to go out the door. And that was one aspect of my testimony, which was a discussion of just how really bad our K-12 education system here is in New Mexico. And so if you're going to ask me what the number one thing we can do in New Mexico to improve economic development, and as that is fix K-12. That's a hard problem. It's a 20-year problem. I think the most important element of that is personnel. We need to get good teachers. That means we need to pay adequate salaries. We need to have a good educational system in place for our teachers. And that means also, by the way, I would say, and I get in trouble with this with my friends over the education college, but it means reforming the education college and having people who come in the front door of the education college who are better prepared, or I should say go out the back door of the education college who are better prepared and ready to go to work. The second thing I talked about was the fact that, and Davin already alluded to this, is that federal funding is flat or down in our state. That particularly affects us here in Las Cruces because of White Sands Missile Range and because of NMSU. And, of course, NMSU gets a lot of its dollars out of federal funding. That means that our two major employers in town, White Sands taken as a whole, both the contractors and also the federal government out there, and NMSU are both in recession right now. And that makes it a very tough job. Gavin has, as Gavin said, making up for that deficit is a tough job, and it's hard to do. And I think that the solution to this will be when federal funding gets back on place and when we start growing. Now, that's the solution for the next couple of years. Looking out further, we need to come up with some sort of new comparative advantage. We need to, if we really want to get our economy growing, we have to establish new industries in town and a new comparative advantage. What I recommended to the legislature to do that was to take an approach that was used in North Carolina, which was to identify high-tech industries that are not otherwise have not otherwise been capitalized on, and try to seek to bring those industries into the state on the absolute ground floor. What I'm going to tell you here is if I know what the industry is, if I know what the technology is, it's too late. I'm an economist. If I know about it, that means everybody knows about it. We need to get some people in who really know what's cutting edge. I recommended a blue ribbon committee that would include perhaps some Nobel laureates, that kind of people who really know
that
technology.
That kind of thinking.
That kind of thinking, to come in and say, what is going to be the technology that's going to be a barnstormer in 20 years? I certainly don't know what it is, but those people do know what it is.
Davin, you know, one of the things that I want to get out of this conversation is finding ways to make your job easier, because you have some challenges. You're looking at high unemployment, low job creation, high poverty, shrinking population, and poor education. These are the forbidden five, according to the 2016 statewide town hall report on economic security and vitality for New Mexico. How challenging is it for Mavita to work to recruit businesses to our region under these conditions?
There's no doubt there's a challenge. So we got to look at what's positive, what we have in the area to attract industry. And we've always had to. I've always said, if you're going to come into the state and do economic development and you're coming from a resource-rich area, you know, whether it's a state or community, you're going to get lost. You got to figure out how to work with what you have and make it happen. I think there's a lot of fortuitous things happening here, and really we have some neighbors here that are going to be not only helpful to our past growth but our future growth, and that is with El Paso and Ciudad Juarez. When we start reflecting and looking at all the different assets we have as a region and not just individually, there's a lot more opportunity we're going to see in terms of international growth, in terms of recognition, in terms of more of a spotlight being shown on the region. Now, we've always done this because we've always been dealt with a lack of resources. When we talk to companies, we don't talk to companies about having a 100,000 person workforce or 100,000 person population. We talk to companies about being in a 2 million person region. When we talk about universities, we don't talk only about NMSU. We talk about NMSU, UTEP. We talk about the institutions that are on the other side of the border. We talk about cumulatively in this area, we have 150,000 students. When you start talking in that language, then you start expressing opportunity to different site decision makers and corporate executives. So, the one thing we have going for us is we're not 100,000 population sitting in the middle of nowhere. There are many more challenges to that. We have great neighbors, a regional perspective that we can help grow, and we try and build upon that. And I want to just touch one thing that Dr. Erickson said. You know, in terms of K to 12. Yeah, absolutely. We need to figure out how to make that work for the next generation of kids coming out of high school and entering either the workforce or college or university. But we were talking beforehand. My belief is also we have to close the loop. It's one thing to have the kids educated coming out of New Mexico, but we don't want to lose them either. We want them to be productive members of society, not just to society, but to the New Mexico society, New Mexico community, and giving back. So somehow we have to close the loop, and meanwhile, fixing K through 12 is of importance, but also we have to establish what is the vision for why your daughter is going to want to be here. Why is she going to want to stay here? And I think those are the trends we have to get in front of, whether it's what's happening with technology, and I can say that probably from a vocational standpoint, we need to be investing more in that. Robotics is going to change how we do things. It's gonna take some jobs away from people, but if you're in front of that, knowing how to work on that equipment, calibrating that equipment, then we're changing the environment and opportunities for those kids. I grew up in New Mexico, and I remember a lot of years ago when I was 18 and graduated, I left the day after high school graduation because I had no idea what careers were out there. I was very naive to, the ways of the world. And, you know, I think today with my son who's 11 and the open world of the internet of information they have available to them, and it's amazing what he picks up on, but I still see kids in the community that they do not understand what career routes are out there and the ones that could be meaningful career routes that are even in our backyard. And I think that's part of the educational system as well, is to express to your daughter and everyone else, there are career opportunities here that you can jump into. There are directions you can go into. But we're not extending that message and motivation, or we need to do a better job of it.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 to put in your call in right now to ask questions of Devin Lopez, Mesilla Valley Economic Development Alliance Director, and Dr. Chris Erickson, NMSU Professor of Economics. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
My name is Stuart McClinic. I'm a reporter with the Silver City Daily Press.
What are some of the issues that are important to the community of Silver City?
First of all, this is a big mining community still, and it really affects this area a lot because when you lose even 500 jobs, if you think about the population of Silver City, that's 10,000 people. That's a big portion of the population that could just lose a job and be economically unstable for a while. And we've got a big tourism department, and the tour of the Gila is great. The Blues Festival brings in thousands of people every year from outside of town. You really get to see how the community works and how it thrives off of almost nothing compared to a big city, but it still does just as fine and thrives in its very own way.
The Silver City Report with Stuart McClintic and Ben Fisher, Wednesdays at 8:45 a.m. and 6:45 p.m. on KRWG Las Cruces and KRXG Silver City. 575-646-2212. If you have questions on economic development, how we can improve economic development, if you have ideas that you've been thinking about, ideas that, you know, again, that are on the forefront for the future of how we can improve economic development, please give us a call. And you can also reach us online with social media on Facebook and Twitter. Dr. Erickson, these conditions that we've discussed, you know, job creation, high poverty, these are part of our history. It's nothing new.
Yep.
You know, how can New Mexico stay competitive with other states to ensure economic security and vitality for New Mexico?
Well, it's a hard task. You know, Davin does very good work in bringing in jobs. I think, as he mentioned, you leverage the border. That helps us a lot here. I saw a study a few years ago that said that every net manufacturing job in North America will be created within 50 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border over the next 20 years. That's not to say there won't be a job somewhere else, but that job will then be offset by a job that's lost somewhere else. So every net manufacturing job in the United States will be on the U.S.-Mexico border. I don't know if that'll be true, but that's what this one study said, and I was convinced by it. So there's lots of opportunity here for that kind of work, but what we have to do is we have to focus on getting the kids ready for it, and then we also have to set up an environment that allows entrepreneurs to come in and set up businesses. I have a family business, very small family business up in Oregon. It's a family farm. And when I work on that, do business up there in Oregon on that farm, I'm able to do all of my interaction with the government online. I'm doing it from down here. I do it online. Licenses, permits, you name it, I can do it online. Down here in New Mexico, I have to go down to the office on El Paseo to do the same kind of stuff for my little tiny business I have here in Las Cruces, which is a small consulting business. And so that kind of thing, if we can get it streamline our business functions to make it easier for entrepreneurs, I think that would go a long ways.
You know, and Edmundo, let me build upon that. I couldn't agree more, and it's something that when we look at today's technology, not 20 years from now, but today's technology and where we should be putting a little bit more emphasis in the state of New Mexico and Doñana County, in my opinion, that could really help impact not only the more metro areas but rural areas as well, is what's happening, that ability to do your work, conduct business, earn a living online. A Harvard Business Review came out with a study that says 1.2 billion people are going to be making an income online in the next 10 or 15 years. Now, that's as a freelancer, contractor, it could be as a W-2 employee. If you think about that, that could create tremendous opportunities for people across New Mexico, including the rural areas. We have to think differently, though. We're going to have to start thinking, what does infrastructure really mean to accommodate growth of that industry? It may not be in the form of a highway that holds big trucks. It may be in great broadband getting to rural areas, and how do you distribute that broadband? I think we got to be, it's not just lines in the ground, but it's everything we've been talking about, from Google doing balloons or UAVs having telecommunications in the sky. There's also something, though, then that gets critical to K-12 is, if this is the future, the ability for someone to work from home, number one, we got to start, again, exposing these new career opportunities to our young people today. They're not easily visible. Some are, some aren't. The other thing we have to really start doing is having some education on the value of being self-supervising yourself, being a productive workforce member, because you're not going to just sit at a phone or in front of a computer for 8 hours a day.
646-2212, 575-646-2212. Let's take a call from Mel, who's got a question on taxes. Mel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm in El Paso right now, but I was looking forward to hearing this program come online. Thank you for the opportunity to ask this question. When you look at taxes in the state of New Mexico, okay, we're always dependent on the government to feed us. And I'm on the opposite side of the scale here. I'm looking at, you're talking about White Sands, you're talking about businesses and stuff. But when you're looking at GRT, personal income tax, state income tax, all of these taxes, I mean, anybody in their right mind that manufactures anything, how is it that they would have to be paying gross sales tax on products, the state gets their first share before the owner of the business actually generates any profit. I mean, this is ridiculous. If I'm not mistaken, I think that we're the only state in the United States of America that has gross sales tax. I believe in the federal government to a certain degree, but we shouldn't depend on the federal government to create jobs. That's ridiculous, whether it's county government, city government, or the federal government. I think that if you want a baseline...
What's the question?
I'm sorry?
What question do you have?
Well, the question is how is it that we can get our legislators to think of something else out of the can to get away from gross sales tax and all the taxes that we're paying? We're paying too many taxes. How can somebody think other than just taxes?
Okay, Mel, thank you very much for your call.
Mel, let me touch upon that a little bit. I think in our number one, I agree with you, and I think our conversation today has already stated, no, you're right. We cannot rely on government spending to produce value here in New Mexico. In fact, that's what Mivita's role is. We're trying to diversify the economy through private industry. So that's what this conversation is about. Now, regarding your GRT question, look, I'll be honest with you. The GRT is very complicated, especially the companies coming in. They don't understand it. They've never seen it before. And it is something that we have to work on. And I have seen some legislators talking about how do you fundamentally change it all. So the discussion is taking place. But I do have to say, if you're a manufacturer, I have to give credit where credit is due. There have been some changes made over the past 4 or 5 years, governor-led, that has really decreased the GRT for manufacturers as you're exporting outside the state of New Mexico, which most manufacturers are doing. And it's really allowed us to become more competitive against Texas and Arizona and some of the surrounding states and actually have resulted in victories that we've had for jobs being created here. So we have seen improvement, but I understand your frustration with the GRT, especially how it affects small local businesses.
Yeah, well, I'm not completely in agreement with Gavin on this particular issue. I actually think that I do agree that the GRT is hard to explain. Gross receipts tax is hard to explain to people from out of state. You hear people complain bitterly about it. Doctors, lawyers, dentists, they complain bitterly.
I worked in advertising. And in talking to advertising agencies out of the state, we would have to tell them there's a receipts tax on advertising. And there's only two states that have this, New Mexico and Hawaii.
Yeah. And my response is, particularly to doctors and lawyers and such, is what's your property tax? Because we have a very low property tax. And the reason why we have a low property tax is because many moons ago, in fact, in 1935, we decided to not tax property because the property values were so low in New Mexico because of the Great Depression that it wasn't possible to tax property to fund particularly schools. And so we went to the gross receipts tax in order to fund schools. Now, we could make the choice to go back. We could make the choice to let's get rid of gross receipts and let's put on property taxes, but you got to fund schools somehow. You got to fund government somehow. When you look at the overall burden of taxes on New Mexicans, it's not out of line. It's okay. Not great, but okay.
And I don't know if we disagree. I think we have to look at what are the trade-offs of what we have in the system today.
I would never disagree with you on purpose.
Okay. Let's do this. Let's take a call from Rhonda, 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Rhonda, you have a question on job creation and the environment.
Yes. I own a bookstore in Truth or Consequences, and I frequently talk to people from all over the world who come to Truth or Consequences for the hot springs and all of that. And it's a lovely place to live. It's got the great air quality. I want to know why the environment is not considered a factor in this bottom line thinking, because this is long term. The environment will be here. We have the most beautiful state in the country. And the environment is not being really talked about even. You know, if you get a bunch of manufacturing and industry down here, you can spoil all of this environmental beauty.
Okay, thank you, Rhonda.
Lose all that tourism. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rhonda.
So, Rhonda, I don't disagree with you. I think one of the major attractors of Las Cruces, in particular, in southern New Mexico in general, is the environment.
I see it pushed on your website, Davin. I see it pushed through the local chambers of commerce, pushing that the environment is part of a big sell here.
But the reason why I don't talk about the environment too much is because even though Governor Martinez might claim the opposite, the state did not put the Oregon Mountains in Las Cruces. The beauty of our economy is not something that we can ruin it, like you said, but we can't really we are blessed with it. We are not able to use government policies to affect it much. To protect it, yes, but not to create it.
Okay, and I have another comment on that. I think there's a misnomer that all manufacturers are just putting emissions into the air. You know, over the past 30, 40 years, it's really been the environmental movement who's really pushed corporations around the country, even around the world, to create new systems that really prevent it. And so we don't necessarily go after violators. That's first and foremost. Just because we say manufacturers, it could be light manufacturing. But also we need jobs, and that's why I think the balance that we're talking about is not only manufacturing but of the technology jobs. We need a little bit of both. We need the diversity here in our region.
And I should mention, too, if you look at some of the data that's put out by the EPA on emissions by industry, for example, lead emissions have dropped to 1/1,000th of what they were before environmental regulations were put in place. Nitric oxide down to 3 or 4% of what it was before environmental regulations were put in place. So we have done a lot to clean up industry. There's no question about that.
Okay, let's go to our social media desk where Simon Thompson has been monitoring things. Simon Thompson, good afternoon, and what do you have for us?
Good afternoon, Edmundo. So on Twitter, okay, we have Lucas Herdon.
This studio in here in just one moment. Let's go into, David, what do you have at your disposal?
Are you there, Edmundo? I'm coming through.
Meet with potential businesses to come into New Mexico. Okay. What's in your arsenal in terms
Lucas Herdon on Twitter,
for
on KRWG, Twitter, he says, isn't one of the hardest things in attracting businesses a lack of infrastructure in Doñana County and New Mexico, educating graduates,
friendly.
Internet, and tech?
Well, we have to be friendly. I mean, that's why you have guys like me and salespeople that we're trying to express that we're friendly and get the word out there.
I'm getting something.
Part of the discussion is, though, we have to have a platform where we are working close with the state and our local representatives to make sure that they also will be friendly when the company actually comes to town. Let me put it this way. We rely, for incentives, we rely a lot on what the state has to offer. I'm not going to lie about that. We're trying to work with the city of Las Cruces, Doñana County, to put more resources into economic development. But you know, there's challenges. Every government entity is going to have its own budget challenges, and so we're encouraging the discussion, because at the end of the day, we need their answers to their own tax problems or budget problems is greater tax revenue.
Okay. Now, before you respond to that, Dr. Erickson, I'm going to play you a quote from an interview that you gave to KRWG. I think it was last year, in regards to tax incentives, and let's listen to that.
The reason why these programs are popular with politicians is because they're political theater. They allow politicians to get their names out in front of the public. I did this to bring this company in here. I like to call them the cocaine of economic development, where you use a government incentive to get a quick fix and attract a couple of jobs in the community instead of doing the hard work.
The cocaine of economic development, tax incentives.
I agree with myself. I know if I were in Davin's shoes, I would be using them to the best of my ability, because that's what his job is. It's not clear to me it's the best use of funds by the state. I suspect, and I think that you can find this from studies, that incentives, business incentives, on net do not create jobs. They do attract particular jobs, but at the cost of not funding resources and not funding other kinds of infrastructure, for example, that will attract other jobs. On the other hand, the evidence is they don't hurt economic development either. They're kind of a zero. And I I just can't help but thinking, you know, we have some incentive programs that are, you know, like the film tax, film credits. I cannot understand why we do that. It's very expensive per job. It does not generate net revenue for the state in terms of taxes. It is these jobs are very fleeting, and I'm very concerned about really getting our monies out of those kind of incentives. I don't think, Gavin, I don't think you work much with those.
No, no, not film incentives. But Edmundo, let me respond to some of that. Look, here's the thing. In a perfect world, sure, should incentives not be given out for businesses to grow? Yes, but we don't live in a perfect world. We all know that. And we live in a very competitive world, especially state to state to state. But here's the thing. Let me talk about some misnomers of some of the incentives. Number one, every incentive that we evaluate with projects, we do impact analysis, and we look for an ROI. So it's not just giving away the farm like some people
ROI
just
ROI being return on investment.
So, for example, if you're going to give $1 million to a company, and primarily that's going to be through job training programs anyway, but if you're going to commit $1 million, you look at what the new tax base is going to be created over the next 3 to 5 years. If that says $2 million, then that's a pretty good investment in my opinion. And we would all want to make that investment in the stock market, you know, doubling our money. Now, the problem is you've heard states where they throw $60, $70, $80 million at projects, and yes, three to five years down the road, they're gone. Yes, that's given everybody a bad name in terms of incentives being given. But I think New Mexico's been cautious. And, you know, unfortunately for me, I think it's overly cautious, but I think they've been cautious. And the other thing is, if you look at one of the major new incentives that's come out is the Local Economic Development Act, those are in effect for infrastructure. Building land and infrastructure. That's what those go towards. So really, we're trying to get over a challenge we have in the first place is that lack of infrastructure, and that's really what the incentives go for.
Let's go to our social media desk real quick and get in a question because we've had several come in. Simon?
So we have Lucas Herden on Twitter. He says, isn't one of the hardest things in attracting business a lack of infrastructure in Doñana County and New Mexico, educated graduates, internet, tech, etc.?
Thank you, Simon.
I'd have to agree. The primary two that I deal with on a day-to-day is going to be infrastructure, which relates to the facilities or real estate, and the second is going to be workforce. Those are the two areas, whether it's an educated workforce or the right skill sets needed for those particular jobs coming in.
575-646-2212 to get in on the conversation on economic development. You wanted to follow up on tax incentives, or
yeah, I actually agree with the social media questioner and say that yes, infrastructure is an issue, and I think LEDA, as Davin was pointing out quite well, LEDA is one of the better programs. And by the way, when it comes to job training, I don't consider those to be incentives. I consider those to be training and education. And so I put those in my mind in a separate category. I know that businesses look at that, and I know that businesses really like that. But the job training, JTIPS program and other programs like that that focus on job training are excellent programs, and I think they do a good service. But when it comes to other kinds of incentives, I'm concerned not that they don't bring in jobs that pay a high ROI when you look at directly at the job, but that they are taking resources away from other programs that could pay a higher ROI or at least the same ORI and would perhaps have a bigger impact.
Well, how challenging is it to look at these incentives and to look at the state as a whole in the last several years where we've seen a reduction in oil revenue and gas revenue, and looking at the incentives that are available when you're competing with other states that might be doing quite better? As an example, looking at Texas. Texas has been very aggressive in what's known as poaching and going to California, trying to get businesses to move to Texas. What's to prevent Texas from coming to New Mexico and saying, hey, New Mexico business, look at what we've got and look at what you've got. Look at the challenge that you've got. Do we have enough incentives in New Mexico to offer existing businesses?
So to offer existing businesses
or potential new business.
Let me just the very few programs that we use to attract businesses, I think, have grown. They've been developed, and there's no doubt California is a poaching ground for everyone. They've let their guard up, and they've become the antithesis of business friendly. They're not business friendly any longer. So that's open hunting for everybody. And we want to make sure. But look, one of the things is we don't just try to attract businesses for any reason here. So, for example, when we go after what's happening in the California market, it's because we're looking at shifts, like, for example, in the Long Beach or the L.A. port. We're trying to understand what rail means over there and then what it means to that movement coming to, like, our Santa Teresa and our $500 million intermodal project by Union Pacific. We try to find legitimate business reasons for companies to want to be in New Mexico. So it's not just every single industry. If we were going after every single industry, we'd be spending widely on businesses, and that doesn't make sense. So you want to use the incentives in the right area with the right industries that make sense for the unique assets we have here so that we're not overspending. And I think we've done a good job about that. I think the challenge, and I would think Dr. Erickson would agree, one of the gaps I've seen in terms of the other layer of growing the economy here in New Mexico is really how do we impact an entrepreneurial culture? How do we impact those small businesses to want to not only grow or be a service industry, but have them turn into those economic-based businesses, them exporting their services all over the country or all over the world? That's what I'd like to see addressed on the other side of the lake.
It's very difficult to, or I shouldn't say very difficult, but one of the issues you have to deal with is the fact is that you have a lot of businesses start up. We probably do okay in terms of starting businesses, but then getting that next step, going from 5 to 25 or going from 25 to 50 or to 500, those businesses that go from 5 to 500, those very few businesses that do that do create most of the jobs. That's true nationally. That's true in New Mexico. And doing that, a term that you hear used a lot of times is economic gardening, where you go in and you treat the local businesses with tender, loving care, try to help them to grow, help them with a business plan, help them with an advertising plan, help them develop strategies that allow them to grow their businesses. Now, we have programs that do that in the state. But we also have impediments, and we've talked about some of those already, the difficulty of doing business with the city, with the state, a lack of infrastructure, and a lack of a trained workforce locally that makes it easy to expand. We've had some successes in the area. Gavin knows them, probably knows more about them than I do, because he works with them on an intimate basis. But if you take our situation overall and you look at us compared to other states and look at us compared to other areas, fact of the matter is we're not keeping up. And I think the reason for that is because we're too reliant on – not. I don't want to say too reliant. That's a value judgment. I want to say we are reliant on White Sands, the university, federal spending. That's going nowhere. We've got to do something. If either we have to accept that, in which case we're going to have slow growth, or we had to do something dramatic to change that, and doing something dramatic is going to take redirecting resources from other areas.
Okay, let's take a call from Monty, 646-2212, 646-2212, if you want to get in a question for the show today on economic development. Monty, good afternoon.
Hi. Yeah, I was just bringing up the one issue, water. Everybody's forgetting that. Up in the northern part of the state, up in Taos, the Indians, Pueblo gave up a lot of water rights, but we just don't have the water. I don't see how you're going to have industrial growth, which requires a lot of water. So anyways, that's what I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Monty.
Yeah, I don't tend to disagree with you, Monty. I think when we see manufacturers come in, again, I want to get over some of the misnomers. Those who actually use some degree of water, the companies today have very, very enhanced recycling systems of the water they use. But for the most part, when we look at manufacturing growth down in, like, let's say, Santa Teresa by our border, it really is. Most of it's light manufacturing, and really all they're using are potable water for their employees for the bathroom. So it's really not as much as you think. We're not trying to bring in heavy industry to begin with that's going to utilize a lot of water.
And of course, the industry which is most water intensive is agriculture. Mm-hmm. And if we wanted to take out, some of the orchards around towns, pecan orchards around town. If we did that, we would have water for industry. But I'm not sure we want to do that. I'm not sure that's a better solution. I think those creates jobs also. Plus, it is part of our culture.
You know, let's go back to tax incentives. You know, are there measuring sticks that exist to see if the incentives are actually working? You know, the return on investment, that's very important. You know, you brought up the film industry looking and, you know, commenting on the fact that you don't see the return on investment. How, Gavin, do you see a return on investment when you invest on, say, a company 5 years from now to say it's working or it's not working?
So, again, we use impact analysis to look at the total amount of the investment, and the impact analysis gives us an idea that if job numbers are met at certain wages based on typical spending patterns in the local economy, then this is the expected tax revenue that'll go to the city, the county, and the state. I'm not going to say it's a simple process. We invest a lot of money in the analytics for that. But it spits out a number that's easy to read and understand and digest. You know, the only thing we could run into is, number one, if the company went under before it was time. But the way I've seen the incentives allocated is, number one, let's go to job training, for example. Job training is after-the-fact program. Those dollars are only given after a six-month training period has already taken place with an employee. So it's an after-the-fact program. And the rest of our tax credits are all after the fact. They're after the year. Your CPA does it on the tax forms. The Local Economic Development Act is, LEDA, is the newer one in terms of how those dollars could be used. And then, of course, there might be a risk that you invest and the company's not here 3 or 5 years from now. But the state has guidelines. A company has to provide securitization in the form of clawbacks so that if they don't meet the numbers desired, then they're going to have to pay back a portion of those dollars given. And that's securitized by either property or other valued assets. And also the way I've seen a lot of these LEDA dollars given out is they've been given out in stages. Okay, you meet performance of year one in hiring, you'll get a second tranche, third tranche, fourth tranche. So it's not like day one a check is being signed and say thank you and good luck. It is actually monitored throughout the process. So I think it's done in a very monitored and cautious way.
I think that Davin does a particularly good job at Mavita with keeping track of these sort of things. Now, of course, you can't know what would have been done with those funds had you not used them for what you did. But I think that there, overall, when you look at the state as a whole, there is a lack of accountability. Overall, when you look at the state as a whole, we look at, for example, there's the high technology or high tech job credit. That is a very expensive job credit. It's not clear that it's creating any jobs that wouldn't have been created anyway. High wage job credit, another very expensive program. Again, it's not clear that that's bringing in jobs that wouldn't have come in anyway. And the problem is that when businesses are looking at, but I agree with you, at the other extreme, we had LEDA programs, which our infrastructure, that infrastructure is going to be there, that infrastructure is going to contribute to economic development for who knows, 40 years, because the infrastructure is there. And the training programs, which I think are very valuable. And so we have programs that are very expensive. I think the worst case is, I hate to say it, is the film credit. At the other end, I think one of the best programs is the job training programs. And in between, we have programs that are more effective and less effective.
You know, I don't work in the film industry, so
I know that's why I can pick on it.
Yeah, no, but I try and look cautiously. What is government's role in economic development and private business and trying to analyze success? You know, when the film credit was started 10 years ago, 11 years ago, I think there was an idea that we were going to be building an industry that involved the permanent jobs, meaning the it would be the animation people, the post-production. It'd be all these different things. So then you had a system set up where you could gradually pull back the film credits, and they're not going to go. The industry's not going to go away. I think the problem is we just never reached that vision. And without reaching that vision, then you do have to question what is a return on investment of something like that.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 to get in on the conversation on economic development. I'd like to invite you to join us on social media to join in on the conversation.
Communications at Western New Mexico University.
What do you enjoy the most about KRWG?
You know, the programs are something that provide viewpoints that you might not be able to see in other media platforms. So I love that it has an authentic feel and it gives you programming that's really unique to KRWG.
My name is Francis Day, and I've been a resident of Silver City for about 7 years. I have a small farm, and currently I'm very active in the auxiliary at GRMC Hospital. I turn it on first thing in the morning and turn it off last thing at night. Some of my favorite programs are the news programs, All Things Considered, the Morning Edition. I, of course, love Garrison Keillor. The extended daytime programming has just been wonderful.
Support KRWG Las Cruces and KRXG Silver City online at krwg.org.
We're coming up on 9 minutes before the hour of 2 o'clock. We have time for one more question at 575-646-2212. Let's go to a social media question from Facebook. Meg says, I see a lot of wealth here, but lots of poverty too. Wealthy people don't seem to be spending their moolah locally, or at least not as much. Local businesses struggle while large corporations move in and thrive. It makes me sick. The city and county need to focus on growing and supporting local business, not corporate chains. Now, is this something that needs to be looked at? Do these corporate chains receive tax incentives on the city level? And I use this as an example. I know a local manufacturer of tortillas. Okay. What kind of incentives does he get versus a company that's going to come in and manufacture tortillas as well to help him set up a plant versus the guy that's been doing this for 30 years?
Well, let's differentiate a corporate chain versus the tortilla manufacturer. The tortilla manufacturer falls under economic-based business, and that is what the state incentives are geared to support, whether you're a new business coming in or you're an existing business that's growing and becoming economic-based. Economic-based basically means your tortilla manufacturer needs to show that he or she is exporting outside the state of New Mexico. If that's the case, then all his or her future growth, they can take advantage of what's on the books today. So I just want to be clear about that, and please tell your manufacturer to give us a call. Secondly is with respect to corporate chain, I'm just going to say it because it's probably what everyone – it's the Walmarts of the world is what I'm assuming that's being spoken about. I have not seen where incentives at the state level or at the city level have been given to retailers. Local service industries, they grow when they're spending – illustrating that there's the value of that growth. That's the only way we're going to get more entrepreneurs in business as well. As Doñana County, as a state, as we improve, as we have more jobs, we have more viable income to spend, then we're going to have more entrepreneurs jump in the game. We're going to have more both local businesses and these chains come in because they're going to see it as a valuable area for them. That's just competition. But we have to get our economics in order first.
Okay, let's go to a call. We've got a caller on the line wanting to offer input on a potential business. Good afternoon. What's your question?
Good afternoon. Yeah, I was just thinking about legalizing marijuana. I realized that there was a proposal recently, you know, shut down at the, I think it was the state Senate level. And I was just, you know, thinking that that would probably be a big economic boost in our state. And just wondering, you know, what you guys think about that.
I think that first of all, I'm in favor of it just on a moral point of view. I think government shouldn't be in people's business on something like that. But let's talk about the economic impact. The economic impact of legalizing marijuana would be something along the lines of the economic impact of alcohol. It's a similar kind of industry. Alcohol does contribute significantly to the coffers of the state, but it's not far and away from the largest contributor in terms of tax revenue. In fact, marijuana may be even a little less because I think alcohol is more addictive than marijuana. I was going to say based on my own experience as a teenager, but maybe I shouldn't say that on a radio station.
Statute of limitations.
Statute of limitations, right. Because, of course, anything that's addictive can be taxed a heck of a lot more than anything that's not addictive. And so cigarettes are taxed heavily for that reason, successfully, and alcohol also. Marijuana will be somewhere on the same sort of level. So not zero impact, not zero benefit, but not, some people argue it would be 3/4 of state revenue. Well, that person has already been using marijuana, I think, when they came up with that estimate.
Okay, so we've got less than 4 minutes to go on the show. So we're going to ask a question that I know it's on the minds of many people. As we look at the state of New Mexico, we're looking at a state that's heavily dependent on federal spending. What is being done to diversify our economy to move away from being so dependent on federal dollars, or is it necessary to move away from federal dollars?
I don't think enough is being done to diversify because I think what we're doing now, and Davin mentioned this, that he looks strategically and tries to bring in businesses that are strategic matches for our community. I'm not sure that's being done consistently on the state level. And without some sort of a consistent strategic plan, it's going to be very difficult to develop a new competitive advantage for our state that's not the federal government. Now, should we diversify away from the federal government? Yes, in the sense that it's not a growth industry. Between the end of World War II and 2008, federal government was a growth industry, and it is not a growth industry now. And that means it's going to be very hard for our state to grow without doing something. I would like to make one last final comment in 30 seconds, which is. Gavin's work and the work the state's trying to do to create jobs is extraordinarily important because we are a very poor state. And when poor people are out of work, it's a big deal. And we need to get jobs. We need to get good-paying jobs to support the people who currently are not living above the poverty level. And that's a very important thing in our state particularly, in our community.
I think simply said, diversification is key. We need to diversify ourselves across different industry sectors. But are we putting an emphasis in economic development and job creation? I have to ask that question. Right now, the Economic Development Department is probably the least funded department of the entire state.
Yeah.
So we just have to ask the question, do we want to make the investment or live with the consequences of not making the investment?
Well, you know, again, I've worked in the sales before, and I know the challenges that come in selling a product and encouraging somebody to invest in that product. I see the challenges that come from the economic development and tax incentives, having to explain literally every single year what your job is done. So the question is, how can we make the job of Mavita easier here in Doñana County for you to go out and bring in those jobs that we're looking for?
You got to remember, we're selling a product. And all about that is you have to create a better product. And I think we've talked about that today, whether it's from the educational sector and having skill sets readily available for the right companies to come, whether it's to have a balance of enticements for those companies to come here and have job creation and have higher levels of job creation. But we have to invest in that product development, pure and simple.
Dr. Erickson, last word.
Well, I think we have to work on getting in growth in our community because we have kids who want to stay in the community. You talked about your daughter already. My daughter's at going to UNM, she'd like to stay in the state. I don't think she's going to be able to with her high-tech. She's a chemical engineering major. That kind of degree is going to be hard for her to get a job locally. And the kids want to stay here. We want our kids to stay here. And we want good jobs for the people in their 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s also.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Dr. Erickson, NMSU professor, and also Davin Lopez, Mavita CEO, correct?
Yes.
Thank you very much for coming in. And this is a conversation we need to have again because there was a lot of things we didn't get an opportunity to talk about. And I would love to invite you to come back at another time.
I'd love to do so. Thank you.
Always happy to come back.
For Voice of the Public, I'm Edmundo Resendez. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next, we'll bring you Leora Zeitlin with Intermezzo on KRWG Las Cruces, KRXG Silver City. I want to thank Fred Martino, who is Director of Content for KRWG, Mark Johnson, who worked the controls, Samantha Sonner, who was studio producer and phone operator, Simon Thompson, who was our social media reporter, also Anthony Moreno, who was our go-to guy. I'm Edmundo Resendez, your host for this special Voice of the Public. Thank you very much. And now on to Leora with Intermezzo. Leora, good afternoon.